Hello and welcome to episode 95 of Back of the Net, the AFC Bournemouth podcast. Hope you're doing well. It's been 14 days since you've heard my dulcet tones. I bet you're glad of that, aren't you? My name's Sam Davis. But then over the past 2 weeks, there's not really been much going on, has there? We had plenty of news and there was a flurry of activity which culminated in Aaron Ramsdale, Simon Francis and Andrew Sermon leaving the club on the same weekend. But that's really where it ended. We've had a few titbits in the meantime, and of course our fixtures have been announced, which is good. I mean, Blackburn Rovers, first game of the season at home, excellent. Home on Boxing Day, home for the last game of the season as well. But when we're going to be let in, no one really knows. So we've been off air for 14 days or so. We've done a little bit on YouTube in the meantime, including Morgan, one of the YouTube contributors. We've put his interview with Cherries defender Jack Simpson online. So I do advise you check that out. And also a big congratulations as well to Chris Root. Chris Root, longtime podcast listener and YouTube subscriber. Of course, we did our Forest Home Hospice fundraiser. We ended up raising over £2,200 for them. We were so chuffed. As a podcast, we've not done anything like this before, so we were really unsure how much we could raise, but to raise that much, absolutely fantastic. So he wins a round of golf with Harry Redknapp, the £50 voucher for the Rope and Anchor, and AFC Bournemouth Superstore voucher, and of course the bottle opener, the bottle opener coaster from Back of the Net. Now, this is episode 95. We're closing in on our century, but we've actually done more than 100 episodes already, because back in the day we covered the Euros and Sean Barker had the unique idea of doing a few episodes entitled 0.5. No idea why that happened. Alas, we're there already. And Back of the Net is going to be there throughout next season too. Many people did ask us, actually, what are we going to do next season? Are we going to scale it down? Well, to be honest, I'm feeling like we're probably needed more than ever before, because although local media does AFC Bournemouth proud with regards to the way they cover it, the Bournemouth Echo, Radio Solent and many more besides, nationally, we won't have that much exposure, will we? I know Sky Sports have announced that the Norwich fixture is going to be moved to Friday night, so that's going to be live and we're going to get national prominence there, but TalkSport aren't going to be worried about us, are they? Adrian Durham doesn't need to go on a 5-minute rant anymore. But Back of the Net, I think, needs to be there. So we're going to carry on doing our stuff on the YouTube channel with vlogs, matchday experiences, podcasts and a hell of a lot more besides. If you haven't subscribed to the pod, make sure you do. And on the YouTube channel as well, just hit subscribe. We appreciate everyone's support and everyone recently that supported us by buying us a coffee as well, including Chris, Kerry, James and many others. If you want to do the same, it's afcbpodcast.com/coffee. Right, what's on the agenda today then? Well, of course, we're going to be covering that Benfica fixture last night. Tough, tough test in Portugal. And also, we're going to be going over the championship preview with the help of two journalists whose names you probably know. Firstly, Daniel Story. Daniel, you probably follow him on Twitter, but he's penned articles for the BBC, Football 365, writes for the Premier League and much more besides. Also, he happens to be a Nottingham Forest fan. So it'll be interesting to get his view. And also Nancy Frostick as well. She's written for the iPaper and is the Sheffield Wednesday journalist for The Athletic. And also, she's got a soft spot for the Owls as well. So it'll be a really interesting take on what they think is going to happen this season in the Championship. And of course, there is a focus on AFC Bournemouth. So we are joined, of course, by the one and only Jeff Hayward for that. But firstly, Benfica, what happened yesterday? It was a pretty good performance in the first half, but there were a few sort of errors at times, and we went down 2-1. And what kind of performance was it? To discuss it with me, we've got Tom Jordan here with me. Tom, how's it going?
Yeah, not bad, Sam. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. And also Neil Whedon as well. Neil, how's it going?
Hi, Sam. Yeah, good, thanks, mate.
I don't know about you, Tom, but I was really worried over the last sort of week or so, because I've been thinking, you know, all the other teams are playing competitive fixtures, like Norwich have got matches abroad lined up, and we had absolutely nothing apart from this weird Betway Cup match, which is just one friendly against West Ham, but for some reason they've made it a cup. And I was thinking, hang on, who else are we playing? But then they pull this Benfica fixture out of the bag, and there you're thinking, hang on, we've got a stern European test here.
Yeah, it was interesting because I thought that we'd definitely only play teams in England, especially with the whole, you know, lockdown business. And I think there was something said that they expected us to only play teams in England. But yeah, it was a nice little game. I thought they're a decent side. You know, they've played in Europe for years, so knew it would be a decent test for us anyway, which is good ahead of obviously the big cup game against West Ham, which is, you know, that's a trophy we all want to win. So,
and Neil, what do you make of that? Having a friendly against West Ham that for some reason has been badged a cup and there's even going to be a trophy, it'll go to penalties, that kind of thing. What on earth is that all about?
I haven't got a clue. I was still looking for the Dorchester fixture.
Yeah.
Where's that one? When are we going to buy that one?
Dorchester, Hamworthy, like, you know, you think that maybe we've dropped down, maybe we'll, you know, revisit those. But apparently we're supposed to be playing some South Coast teams as well. But, you know, goodness knows if that's going to happen. And it's an interesting one, isn't it, Tom? Because, you know, there are so many different variables with this. We're playing a team that's at the top level of European football. We've got JT in charge. We didn't know who was going to be there and who wasn't. And as it turned out, there was no Callum Wilson, no Josh King, no David Brooks as well, and no Harry Arter. Now, Chris Temple on Twitter said that it looks like Harry Arter's future lies elsewhere. Brooks and Wilson were apparently injured. No Josh King. He's being linked with Spurs at the moment, so goodness knows what will happen with that. So what did you think of the omissions? Did you just think, yeah, I'll take their word at face value with regards to the injuries? Or do you think Wilson and Brooks are maybe being kept behind for other reasons?
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one because, I mean, I mentioned it. It was one of my mates mentioned it to me, and I thought that's a good point that they didn't. Meppham travelled, but they never said that he was injured. Well, you know, why have you not mentioned that Meppham was injured? It's like, it was there was no point in mentioning that Meppham was injured. Do you know what I mean? Which was a bit strange because I don't think Callum even travelled, yet they mentioned that he was injured. Whether they are or not, I mean, I made a point that I thought if Brooks genuinely is injured, then surely any of the suitors are going to be thinking, he's injured again. Am I really going to pay 20 plus million for this guy who's injured again? Do you know what I mean? Mm. So whether they were or not, you know, I was quite keen to see some of the other guys, really, you know, some of the players that you think will definitely be a part of the squad going forward. And, you know, whether we needed to see, you know, whether Callum and Brooksy and that stay or not, we kind of know what they're about, particularly Callum. And I think it was a good opportunity to see some of the other guys that are probably heads are a bit more switched on, you know, what they're going to do for Bournemouth in the upcoming season. So, yeah, wasn't sure what to make of it, really.
And then the starting lineup saw Begovic, Smith, Steve Cook, Kelly, Rico, Stanislas, Lerma, Lewis Cook, Dan Juma, Dom Solanke, and also Sam Surridge up front. I think out of that, there weren't really many surprises, apart from maybe the goalkeeper, because Begovic, I thought, based on the money he's probably costing wage-wise, I didn't think he'd be involved. But as it turned out, he had the first half and Travis had the second.
Yeah, that was that surprised me because, I mean, it didn't surprise me that the goalkeeper's got a half each. Mm. And, you know, whether you read too much into it that Begovic started, I'm not sure. They're both going to get 45 minutes each. The thing that surprised me was that if Begovic was surplus to requirements here, you know, whether it's the money he's on or he's just not going to be a part of it, then you would have taken a young goalkeeper and played a half with Travers. You wouldn't have bothered playing Begovic, in my opinion. So that makes me wonder, is there a chance, another chance for Begovic? Does Tyndall want to have another look at him? which fair enough, he does. If, you know, we don't know, you know, in his contract, whether relegation affected his wages, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I would be very surprised if he's just going to go now, because you wouldn't have played him. You just wouldn't have bothered. You would have played, what's the young lad, Dennis, isn't it? You would have played him for a half.
Yeah.
So that was interesting that he travelled. I'm not going to read too much into the fact that he started, because they did just get a half each. So, but yeah, you know, see what happens with that. It was a bit of a surprise, but apart from that, as expected, really.
And what were your thoughts on the first half, Tom? Because for me, I was watching, it seemed a very open and expansive game, loads of space. The type of game that Bournemouth like to play, really. A lot of balls into channels, and it sort of ebbed and flowed. It looked like it was quite an attractive sort of match to watch. It was almost like your sort of Brighton performance away, where we won 5-0, and there just seemed to be acres of space on the pitch. And we seemed to have the pace on the flanks and through the middle, actually, to exploit them. And it was a really nice game to watch, although it didn't start too great, I suppose, did it? Where Lerma gifted a free kick on the edge of the box, and, you know, they took it, albeit, you know, they blasted it wide. But then individual errors started to creep in. And I think it was Lewis Cook that gave it away, wasn't it? And then it was Adel Taarabt, that great strike into the top right-hand corner. Could Begovic have done better there? Because a lot of people on Twitter said he should have.
I mean, I think it was the fact that he got a hand to it. I mean, I think if he hadn't quite got a hand to it, people would have just said, that's a great goal. Mm. I think that'd be a little bit harsh. And yeah, like you say, it started off quite lively. I thought we looked, you know, we were pressing quite high. It was quite fast tempo, actually, for pre-season friendly. And they've obviously got a bit of quality. And I thought we set up the right way, tried to counter, like you say, cause some problems. But the individual errors, I mean, obviously it was Lewis, particularly for the first goal. That's going to happen in friendlies. You're going to, you know, the odd loose touch here and there. You know, you're going to be a little bit rusty. But I thought on the whole, we looked quite fit, quite ready. I was pleasantly surprised with that. And like I say, they are a decent side, Benfica. They're no mugs. And I thought we got in a few times. And yeah, we looked quite lively. I was quite happy with the first half display, despite coming down. But I thought both goals were pretty good. So was ours, to be fair. All three goals were very good, I thought.
Yeah, and you know what? We've all been sort of focusing on our striking options and wondering whether we're going to keep King or Callum. And we've been thinking, is Dom Solanke going to be the one up front? And can Sam Surridge do a job? But I haven't really given a second thought to Dan Juma, weirdly. But arguably, player of the match. And Neil, I mean, you saw a bit of the first half, but most of the second half. But Dan Juma, he could be promising in the Championship if we keep hold of him, couldn't he?
I rate him really highly from what he's done while he's been fit enough to play for us so far. He's looked really lively, very skillful, and I think in some of the cases where he's played so far last season, I think he's looked almost ahead of other players insofar as he's got some ideas, and I think they've been too slow to catch up with him.
Mm.
If you know what I mean, you know, he's waiting for a ball that never comes, and therefore looks as though he's out of position or not making the right move. But I think, you know, I think he's definitely, if we keep him in the Championship, sure he's going to be a starter up front for us.
Well, that's right. And what a cracker. I think it was on about 16 minutes. And it was two players that were all sort of unsure of and really wanting to keep. It was Lerma that spread out a ball to Rico on the left side. And I thought he was going to whip it in, but he didn't. He sort of pulled it back slightly where Dan Juma was waiting. Mm. He held his run, you know, then collected the ball and he cut in on the right foot, Tom, and cracking finish into the corner, wasn't it? I thought it was a really, really great goal.
Yeah, and I was chuffed for him because I agree with what Neil said. When we've seen him in kind of like, you know, kind of little cameos, and I've always thought he's looked lively, he's looked a threat. But I think that's probably I don't know when he come off. He was one of the last players to get substituted. He played, that's probably the longest he's played for us in one game. And I was really pleased with him to get his goal because I think he had a chance just before that, but you know, really early actually, where he danced for a few players and just skied it. But really pleased to see him get that goal. I thought that lifted his confidence even more. It was a beautiful pass from Lerma out to Rico. Yeah. And then, the Rico, I thought he looked good at times. I think Diego's one of them players that I kind of think, God, he's a really good player. Then 5 minutes later, I think, oh, what's he doing? Do you know what I mean? He's not consistent. He's still got them little errors in him. But I think going forward sometimes, I thought him and Dan Juma had a really nice link up in that first half. And I thought that caused him the most problems. I think Dan Juma is going to be similar to to Stanislas on the other side, it's going to be fitness. It's going to be fitness because Dan Juma was highly rated before we got him. I think the only reason he probably didn't go to a bigger club was because of his injury record. Then obviously he's come to us and got injured a lot. Stanislas is clearly going to be a top player in the Championship if he stays fit. So I was really pleased to see both of them, but particularly Dan Juma, get a long time out there today and look quite fit and look, you know, look fresh. That was really good.
I like to think that I know a bit about European football, but I must admit, I wouldn't be able to tell you whether that starting 11 for Benfica was strong or not. Do you know if it was, Tom?
All I saw, I knew a few names, mainly because I think it was Turat and Vertonghen, both from the Premier League. But I saw from Benfica on the Twitter and stuff, doing a bit of translation, they virtually played like half of their best team in the first half and half of their best team in the second half, with a few kind of like fringe players in there. So I think it was a bit of both halves, to be honest.
And then obviously they made it 2-1. Again, I think Bournemouth were probably quite guilty of overplaying it. It was a really energetic game, and there were times where it almost seemed too fast and the players were just making errors. And I think it landed at the feet of Everton, who shot on the turn. You know, Begovic couldn't get across, and it was a really decent finish low to his left. And then, you know, I think the game started to turn. Bournemouth didn't have as many chances, and there seemed to be so many shots from Benfica from distance. Most of them were arguably sort of over the bar, but some good expansive football from the home side. They started to dominate the midfield. I think Dom Solanke and Sam Surridge, the more it went on, they looked a little bit more exposed up front, didn't they? I mean, Dom got a spot on the ball for quite a bit. But Sam Surridge, not so much. He didn't really seem to get a look in, and maybe that was why Tindall took him off after 45 minutes, Tom.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I was really quite excited to see them both together, Dom and Sam, but you'd like to play obviously one off the other, you know, whether it's 4-4-2 or not. You don't really have them flat next to each other, next to each other. But I couldn't really work out which one was supposed to be dropping off and which one was supposed to be kind of, you know, playing a little bit higher up. They tended to kind of vary that, and it just didn't work. They didn't get a great amount of service. I think, like we said, it come through the flanks more. But yeah, they huffed and puffed, but nothing really went for them. And then you kind of felt like the more they got hold of the ball, we might as well just put another man in midfield, which is obviously what we decided to do at half-time. And that didn't surprise me. I don't think it was necessarily either the striker's fault, really. I think it was just one of them games, and they were more comfortable on the ball than us. And I think we had quite a lively start, but then little things, I thought we just started, the legs were going a little bit, and there was a few heavy touches, and we lost our rhythm a little bit. But yeah, it wasn't too much to overly concern me. I just think that I think it's good that you continue playing them two for a few games and just see how they get on. But yeah, I think it was probably a game against good opposition where we could have done with an extra man in midfield. So I could see why he changed that.
I think Solanke is closer to a number 10 than Surridge, isn't he?
I'd agree.
Solanke has been played in that position before. And we saw with one of the goals he scored, which isn't difficult to remember. But he has got good feet. And so, yeah, maybe it'll work. Let's hope so.
I mean, you're sort of looking at our striking options, and if Callum Wilson does go, Josh King does go. I mean, Dan Juma seemed to be up front for a little bit today, and, you know, seemed to do all right wherever he played, really. I thought he was very tricky on the ball, you know, looked to cut in. What did you make of his second half performance, Neil?
Well, I thought we started okay, but then it just looked like any other game from the second half of last season. After that, even as far as playing out the goal kicks short and getting into trouble, getting to the Benfica penalty area, trying to overplay, and then a player just not having anyone to pass to, nowhere to go, and losing the ball. So I thought it was a disappointing second half, and we just. As I sent out a tweet halfway through saying we just need a maverick. We need someone in there who can do something a bit different. I think Dan Juma could be that player, or even Stanislas, you know, when he's on song. But we had no one to do anything different. And if you were the manager of the opposition, looking to defend against us with a 2-1 lead, it doesn't appear to be that difficult to put a system together to do that. to stop us playing.
It's very strange, though, because I feel as though the first half performance was miles better than the second half, yet we end up losing it 2-1. Whereas in the second half, it's, you know, like it's a 0-0. And, you know, we did make changes with Travers, Stacey, Billing, Gosling, Kilkenny, Simpson. And then towards the end, you've got, you know, Zamora coming on and Namdi as well. So, yeah, you know, there were a lot of changes. And Philip Billing, he's a person that divides fans. And I thought his interceptions at times in the second half were very good. I thought, you know, he makes these leggy challenges and seems to intercept them. But when he's on the ball, he sometimes doesn't use it as well as he should. Neil, thoughts on
that? Yeah, well, Billing, I think it is frustrating to watch him because, like you say, he's very leggy, obviously very tall. And I think there are some people who watch him who expect his legs to go like Ryan Fraser's, but he can't do it. He's too big. I think he's a good player, but I don't think we actually know where to play him to get the best out of him. You know, he can pass the ball. You know, we've seen that he can get up and head the ball in the opposition area, but I don't know. It's just consistency, isn't it? And you know, you see him do great things for 20 minutes and then he drops out of the game.
So obviously we ended up losing 2-1. And Tom, how are you feeling after it? Have you got any sort of real emotions? Because I must admit for me that, you know, not much has overly changed. That first 45 minutes, I must admit, has filled me with a little bit of optimism. But then you see the usual mistakes creep in with, you know, Travers kicking it into touch a number of times and sometimes guilty of overplaying it when sometimes we should just maybe get rid. And maybe Tindall made the team selections that he did and left the players that we've talked about out because he knows they're on the way. Because, I mean, rumour has it that, you know, Callum Wilson will be, etc., Josh King, David Brooks. So maybe the players that he had on show today are the ones that he thinks are going to be moving forward with us in the Championship.
Yeah, well, I'll take that if that's the case. I mean, Lerma started and I would have expected him to go. But yeah, I think it was just, it was kind of what I expected in terms of, it's your first pre-season friendly, you're playing against a team that are good on the ball. We tried to play counter-attack and I thought it worked in the first half. Once they got the lead, we got leggy. They just kept the ball. We couldn't break them down. Like Neil said, we didn't really have any plan B. It was quite easy to... The game was always going to end 2-1. But, you know, that was how it was going to be for me. We started quite well and we were always going to tire a little bit. It was our first game back. Yeah, there wasn't anything that really surprised me too much. I think what's clear to see is we're going to be playing out from the back again. That hasn't changed at all. And as whether you agree with it or disagree with it, you know, if a few things go wrong, well, we're trying to play the way that obviously the coaches are telling us to play. You know, the lads will say, well, I would clear it, but I'm told to play this way. They've just got to get better at doing that. If that's what the coach is telling them to do, they're not going to start lumping it because then they won't be in the team. They just got to get better at doing it. And if they're not good enough, then they're going to have to be replaced. But yeah, I thought on the whole, it was kind of as I expected. I don't know what you think, but I genuinely, if Eddie Howe was still the manager, would it have been any different? I couldn't see any difference in the way we played. There wasn't anything today that made me think, oh, Jason's changing it. Not at all. Whether that'll come with a few more games, I don't know. But there was nothing new, really, which is not neither here nor there. I don't think that's brilliant or really poor either. But yeah, it was okay. I think the only frustrating players was Lewis Cook in the first half. Just had one of them halves. As soon as he gave the first goal away, which was just him losing the ball, then he just kept losing it. And then I think, like we were saying, then you bring Billing on in his place. And I thought, oh, they're two players that are clearly got quality, but I don't know what they really do in terms of, I've said this to you before, Sam. Everyone knows what Jefferson Lerma does, you know, in his defensive role. Gosling runs around and he does come in with a lot of goals as well. Billing and Lewis Cook, they're not defensive players. They're not really attacking players. They don't score any goals. They don't really assist too much. They give the ball away now. I can clearly agree with a lot of fans that they've got a lot of ability there. There's no question. But they've got to be giving more, the pair of them. Because for me, if we had to play tomorrow, our first game, I'd play Gosling and Lerma, personally.
Would you rather have someone who maybe didn't come into the game as much as Lewis Cook does, but then did something exceptional.
Yeah.
At some point during the game.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think to be fair to Lewis, you know, he's brave, so he wants to get on the ball all the time. So you're always gonna, you know, you're always gonna lose the ball now and again. It wasn't his fault that when he lost put it in the top corner. But yeah, just for me, he's got to, like you say, he's got to grab the game a little bit more and just have more of an impact in terms of numbers, in terms of assists, in terms of creating chances, scoring goals. I can't remember the last time Lewis Cook had a shot.
It feels like confidence, doesn't it?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, and like you say, he did have a horrible injury as well. And he was definitely better before that injury. I'm not questioning that at all. And like I say, I'm not saying we should get Billing and Lewis Cook out. I'm just saying, I think it's more frustration because we know how good they are. Because we know that technically they're better than Dan Gosling. But Dan Gosling, I know what I'm going to get from him. Do you know what I mean? And that's that thing where Dan Gosling is just your pro and that experience, and he'll just give you 100% and you know what you're going to get. But for the ability that Billing and Lewis Cook have, I just feel they should be given a little bit more. But we'll see.
There were a few players I thought, bright flashes. I thought, Stanislas had a few moments in that first half. But, you know, one of the standout performers, I think, obviously we've mentioned Dan Juma, but Lloyd Kelly at the back looked so assured, didn't he? And, that fee that we paid Bristol City, there's no way that we won't get less for him. Should we sell him? We've made a tidy profit on him. However, if we can keep him in the Championship, that would be absolutely fantastic. And just looks really assured on the ball, very calm, very composed, and could be an integral cog this season, couldn't he, Tom? Because I thought, astounding.
Yeah, no, he just looks a class act, doesn't he? I mean, when we've done a few of these, we've done the podcast about the kind of player ratings and stuff, and I felt like, I can't give him that high because he's barely played, but he's been that good that you just can't help but, think, God, we've got one hell of a player here. And I think, obviously, Meppen didn't play tonight, but with him being available as well, you've got options there to kind of change system in terms of like a three in the back, because Lloyd Kelly's also natural as playing as a fullback as well as a centre back. And I just feel like that's going to be another little option to us. We change that in the second half because he's so comfortable on the ball. You wouldn't mind him kind of playing left centre and then kind of going out to a fullback role and getting on the ball a little bit more. But yeah, he's got the physique as well. He's kind of playing like I expected Mings to be when he come in, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, very true.
But I feel a lot more assured with Lloyd Kelly. He doesn't look as, Mings is a good player, but Lloyd Kelly looks more composed. I don't feel like there's going to be as much clumsiness with Lloyd Kelly. And I'm really looking forward to seeing him. But I don't want to think too far ahead, but if he plays for the full Championship season and we don't go up, we ain't keeping him for much longer because he's a talent. He's English, young English as well. He's a hell of a talent.
It's going to be interesting to see how the season unfolds. And Neil, it was Benfica and not Brentford, wasn't it? So there are some positives to come out of that, even though we're still kind of thinking, it wasn't brilliant, but it wasn't not good.
I don't think we're desperate for a win. Couldn't we do with, maybe not Dorchester, but, a team where we can actually get, just relax a bit and play the way that we know that our players can play and get a bit of confidence.
Yeah.
Like West Ham, for example.
Yeah, and you know what? We might even lift some silverware as well. But yeah, there's not much that we can, we could read into every single like individual, performance. But they have had a bit of time off, and it was sort of unique in many circumstances. Playing in Portugal and with JT in charge as well. We don't quite know what input Graham Jones has had at this point as well, but I'm sure that he's going to have sort of more input as time goes on. So I don't know. It's going to be a very absorbing start to the season, and there's more friendlies to come that are going to be announced in the next few days. But there we are. Yeah, Bournemouth were beaten 2-1 at Benfica. Not a bad scoreline. Tom, thank you very much for popping on.
Cheers, Sam. Nice one.
And Neil, thanks for your input as well.
Thanks, guys. Good to talk to you.
So there we go. It was always going to be a tough test against Benfica, wasn't it? And more friendlies are on the way. They said three South Coast clubs. Now, we've got West Ham. Are there any others going to be announced? I'm sure news will emanate in the next few days. And it's going to be a busy week in terms of incomings and outcomings as well. The last time we spoke on the pod, we briefly touched on the fact that Stephen Purchase steps up to number two, and of course, the introduction of Graham Jones. So it's going to be interesting how everyone combines and which players we can keep hold of. Of course, on Back of the Net, we'll try to keep you abreast of what's going on. Remember to subscribe to our YouTube channel and also do follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/AFCB podcast. And we're sure to have more opinion in the next few days. Now, on the YouTube channel, one of the videos that we were really proud to put on was with Nancy Frostick and Daniel Storey. Two journalists with a lot of championship pedigree, of course, and Bournemouth entering the championship again for the first time in 5 years. So myself and Jeff Hayward chatted to them about the forthcoming season.
Daniel, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks for having me.
And as well as Daniel, we are delighted to also be joined by Nancy Frostick as well. And I gather, Nancy, you have somewhat of a soft spot for the Owls as well, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can't help but kind of get emotionally invested when you watch them every week and go on the emotional journey, which it always is watching Wednesday. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So in order to talk more about what lies ahead then, what we'll do is bring in Jeff Hayward. Jeff, how are you doing?
Very good, Sam. Thank you.
Are you ready for the new season yet?
Do you know, full of anticipation, because it feels like it's a bit of a mystery. And I think that's what this show's going to be really good, to get some insights from pundits and broadcasters who know what it's all about. And Daniel Forrest, I mean, a club decorated all over Europe, like Sheffield Wednesday, you're seemingly another team truly embedded in the championship. Lots we can talk about, I'm sure, but I must start by asking, how has Forest overcome the playoffs?
Well, I mean, that's $1 million question, and I'm not sure they have. If ever Forest needed a 3 month break rather than a 6 week break, it was this season, because I mean, Bournemouth fans, I'm sure, will know it became a bit of a national joke that Forest needed to, well, effectively ended to needing up not to lose 4-1 at home to Stoke on the final day, and did exactly that, lost 4-1 at home to Stoke on the final day. And we've been here before, you know, we've never got to a playoff final. If we're going to do it, it's going to be automatic promotion, I can guarantee that, because, yeah, we seem addicted to this farce at the end of the season of just collapsing several metres before the finishing line.
Yeah, it was an absolutely crazy watch, really, seeing your game on Sky Sports and then seeing the scores come in from Swansea as well. Couldn't believe it. And it just sums up what the championship is all about. But, you know, judging by that final day, Daniel, and, you know, also 20 years in the championship, it's obviously a difficult league to get out of. So what was it like to see a little club from Dean Court manage it in 2 years?
I think the only golden rule of the championship is that it's a complete meritocracy, and you get out what you put in. And if you're a club that has got a kind of lingering, hardwired arrogance or a chip on its shoulder that it doesn't deserve to be there, I think you get found out pretty quickly. And Forest have done that over the last decade. They've been a club basically built on sand and false promises and past glory, and none of those are particularly helpful when getting promoted. You look at clubs that have done it well, you know, Sheffield United is one, Bournemouth is another, Leicester, they've had a plan and they've stuck to it, whether it's a flagship manager, whether it's a recruitment model, whether it's a rich owner, they've done things pretty sensibly, and Forest have very rarely done anything sensibly. You know, we've had more managers than most clubs have had new signings. So yeah, I honestly believe under the new regime that things have changed off the pitch, and if not on it, at the end of last season, we at least saw some bright sparks, because we weren't really expecting to get in the playoffs anyway last season. But this is the acid test, because we did collapse again, and it's how we respond to that.
And Nancy, I think I speak for all Bournemouth fans saying that you will always be part of Bournemouth folklore after what you did to Watford in the last minute 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So thank you. But from our perspective, I mean, the Premier League wasn't that great. I mean, many Bournemouth fans look at the Championship as being a really exciting league. We look at it as almost we're going to be embracing our relegation to a division which many of us regarded as a fun place to be, but that's possibly because we had 2 years of success in it, I guess. What do you feel about it as a division for Wednesday fans? Because like Daniel, as Forest fans, you've been in there a long time now. How do you feel about the division?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I was literally, just before I came on, watching, it was like a Sky Sports clip, and they basically clipped together the last day of the season where obviously you had all those teams scrapping to stay up, and then obviously Forest and Swansea and all of that playing out, and Brentford and West Brom dropping in and out of the top, up for second and third. So from that point of view, like, you can't help but love it just as a football fan. I mean, you know, it's great if your team's not involved. So like the last day of the season, from my point of view, obviously Wednesday were needing points because you didn't know what was happening with the EFL thing, but also, you know, it wasn't a massive game against Middlesbrough. Like, probably beating Neil Warnock was like the biggest line to have come out of that. And they didn't, but you know, that was like probably the main drive there. But yeah, it's such a fantastic league. Like, honestly, I think it's easier to have fond memories and think of it if your team has obviously blitzed through the league and gone straight up. And there's definitely kind of a lingering, pain for teams like Forest and Wednesday and probably Leeds that have been there for a while. And it's, especially if you've come close and kind of got to playoff finals or done that sort of crumbling away, which is, I feel like for those sorts of clubs that have been knocking around in the Championship for a couple of years, you almost need then like 2 to 3 years just to get over that sort of getting so close, unless you've got a Bielsa or, you know, someone really iconic with great philosophy and everything just to keep the momentum going, because it really is a sucker punch for, you know, these bigger clubs, if you want to think of them that way, traditionally. So, but yeah, I think it's a fantastic league. I love it.
And Nancy, what do you think are the ingredients that make it such a good league? Because for me, if I'm going to answer that question myself, it's the variety of teams that you can play. I mean, this season there's Wickham with a, you know, 9,000 seater stadium, whatever, and then you can go to Hillsborough where it's, you know, near 40,000. It's just a variety of teams, and the fact it comes thick and fast. What for you makes it so exciting?
Yeah, I think it's that actually. Like, like, as a reporter, I've not been necessarily going to games for that long, but like the Championship and reporting on a Championship club has taken me to Luton, which I think is the most fantastic ground because, you know, it's built into basically into a row of houses in, yeah, you know.
I love that stadium.
It was unbelievable. Like, and not to say that you don't get that in the Premier League, but obviously I think just getting that range of that sort of ground, which is a bit older, you know, like really well loved and has been there for ages, through to even just going somewhere like Cardiff, which is a bit more of a generic stadium. But again, it's kind of, you see all sides of it where some of the clubs obviously haven't had like the massive Premier League money to just think, oh, we'll build a brand new stadium and, you know, do something that's not the same as other clubs, because I know a lot of thought goes into stadium design, but it's kind of, I don't know, I love that side of it and really getting into the areas and the communities that are like round the grounds as well.
Before I hand over to Jeff again, I just want to say about Luton. I mean, that's one I really hope fans are allowed back in, because I've said it on the podcast before, it's the strangest experience. You go down a road of terraced houses and all of a sudden there are these away gates, and then you walk through someone's back garden in order to get into the back of the stand. And when you see it, is this row of greenhouses or whatever it is, or beach huts on the left-hand side. It's such an eclectic ground. And I just, I really hope that fans are allowed back in by the time that, we can go there. But anyway, Jeff.
Yeah, I was going to say, it feels like the Championship is more connected to the realities of football than some of the Premier League experience might be. But what do you think, Daniel? What makes it special, but also what makes it so difficult to get out of?
I agree that what makes it special is that absolute variety, and also, you know, I know you mentioned it briefly, but the relentlessness of the schedule, especially this season, the fact that managers know for good and bad that if they win on Saturday, they've got another game on Tuesday, and if they lose, they've got a chance to put it right. That's great. I also think it's a great league for young players, because even more so this season, clubs will have to rely on deeper squads. And you do get those, you know, I know Jude Bellingham was the story of last season, but you look at some of the players in championship clubs like Louis Sibley at Derby, and there is a chance for 16, 17-year-old kids to make their name. But we should also say that it's a division that's basically founded on financial desperation, because, you know, I read a report the other day that said, you know, Reading spend basically 260% of their revenue on wages. So there are clubs, and mine included, Forest included, that go above and beyond because of that sniff of the Premier League. And it's that desperation, I think, which creates those kind of magic end of season stories where everyone's clambering or in our case, collapsing for the line.
So, I mean, so what do you think has been the missing piece for Nottingham Forest in their ambitions to get back into the Premier League over the last sort of 20 years? What, you know, what have you not had that other teams have?
I mean, firstly, at the moment with Sabri Lamouchi, the end of the withstanding, this is probably the first time in maybe 20 years that Forest have got a manager that I'm more scared of losing than us sacking. We've sacked so many managers. Managers barely have a year in the job, and I hope that that's changed. But we also have a really good academy, and yet we spend, you know, our turnover of players is astonishing. We've, I think, signed something like 40 players in the last two and a bit years. And there's just been this kind of revolving door sense that nothing's ever really going to stick while there's this constant turn and churn of players. So that's something we've got to get right. Use the academy more. We'll probably sell Matty Cash, our right back, for 10 or 15 million pounds this summer if Fulham will pay it, which is, that's a good sign, the fact that we're doing that. We shouldn't, for too long, we've seen the idea of selling players as a weakness, not a strength. You know, the fact that we can do that and then reinvest, that's what we should be doing, not just throwing more money at the problem. But yeah, I can't say with any honesty that we've definitely got over that, but I hope we have.
And what do you think is the secret, Nancy, to the failure of clubs like Derby, Forest, Sheffield Wednesday? I mean, some really big clubs still languishing in the Championship. Is it the desperation, the weight of expectation? What is it?
I mean, I think probably, you know, especially talking about Wednesday and Leeds, they've not been that financially stable. You know, they've both dropped down into League One, and Wednesday were on the brink for a while, you know, looking like administration and all sorts. You know, not too long ago since they've been relegated, and obviously Leeds had all those problems as well. So obviously we think of them as big clubs because of the fan bases, but it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, they've had all that backing that maybe they have now got with newer owners. But yeah, I think, so that takes time. When they got relegated, you know, both Leeds and Wednesday have been in League One and come back up again. And I think, especially for Wednesday, they came so close. It was only, you know, 3-4 years ago that they were in the playoffs, and it looks like they had the recipe there for success, and, you know, had Carlos Carvajal, and he was great, and, you know, all the players were, looks to be moving in the right direction. But then again, it's a similar problem to what Daniel was just saying about Forest, where, you know, the owners invested a lot of money in the playing squad, which then has had its problems with FFP and all of that, which is why they are where they are now on minus 12. But also just selling players at the right time, or even selling them at all, instead of just letting the clock run down on the contract and then, you know, letting them leave for nothing, where you'd think even a million, half a million, you know, it does all count in the Championship when you're basically having to play by the rules of FFP rather than really what you want to do with the club. You know, that dictates basically how the owners run the football club rather than what they can always physically put in for these bigger clubs. It's a different story at the other end. You know, Barnsley, Rotherham, clubs like that are having to operate on a more sustainable basis because, you know, their owners haven't necessarily got billions or whatever to put in, or that's the approach their owners want to take. Whereas, you know, clubs like Wednesday or Forest, where there's that bit more money there, they're having to basically run with the EFL's rules rather than what they'd want to do, as you would be able to do in the Premier League, you know.
It must have been strange to see smaller clubs over the last sort of 5 or so years, like Watford, Bournemouth, Brighton, Burnley, Huddersfield, you know, all up in the top flight. Now, I know that Twitter and fans on Twitter is not a gauge of anything, but with some clubs, it comes, for instance, Leeds, it comes across in particular that some fans think they've got a God-given right to be in the top flight. Is that the case with any Sheffield Wednesday fans at all, or is there a bit more humility up there?
I think, especially with recent years, like with where Wednesday have been and the things that have happened, I think that's less probably prevalent. And, you know, I mean, we don't need to talk about Sheffield United, but obviously that's happened, you know, in the last couple of years. And, you know, it's kind of hard to be across the city from that. And, you know, everyone's quite rightly praising Chris Wilder and everything that's going on there. So it's kind of, you can't be ignorant of the fact that the clubs that are up there are there because they've either played good football, they've had a little bit of luck, which I think is a massive thing in the Championship, especially when you get down to the playoffs, you know. And it's just, yeah, there's a lot of things there, which I think maybe means that most Wednesday fans probably aren't or haven't got that sense of entitlement that should be in the top flight, because it has been so long now. I think, you know, without sounding really harsh, like if it was meant to be, they'd be there already or have been there. So, yeah, that's probably my view on the Wednesday situation. But obviously I can't speak to Leeds and a few of the other sort of bigger clubs. But, yeah.
Yeah, just on that, Daniel, who do you reckon are the most arrogant fan base in the Championship that we need to look out for?
I'm not going to go near that question. I agree, and I think there's certainly an element of Forest support that thinks, you know, if you asked 50 random Premier League fans, probably of a certain age, it should be said, for their 20 ideal 20 Premier League teams, I think Forest were probably in there, and I think Sheffield Wednesday would probably be in there as well. So I think that creates this idea that they're seen as a big club creates a certain pressure, and I think some fans are kind of happy to live up to that. But now I think there are Forest supporters who most Forest supporters realise that those glory years, if they mean anything, you know, they are only memories now. They are so far away. You know, I wasn't born when they won either trophy, and it means nothing now. And if anything, it's held us back for too long rather than helped us. So this notion of being a big club, I remember when Forest went down to League One, and it sounds a very arrogant thing to say, but maybe it was the same for Wednesday, but we felt like everyone's cup final. You know, we really did. And I think there's probably a sense of that in the Championship, that if you consider yourself to be one of the big clubs, you're kind of just going for pride before a fall there, because it's so relentless that you will lose games to teams that at the start of the season you think you should beat. That's the very nature of the league.
I must say, I am old enough to remember that Forest side, and it was actually a great team to watch. The City Ground used to be a terribly muddy pitch to play football on as well. I remember some vintage games where the balls just seemed to get stuck in the mud, and Birtles used to stand on the six-yard box, wait for it to stick in the mud and stick it in. And that was the game plan, it seemed to be, half the matches. But yeah, no, I think Forest are a great club. But one other area that I think is interesting about the Championship is that you see those three clubs go up from the Championship to the Premier League, and they're always the three who are fancied to go straight back down because there's this perceived quality gap. Do you think that's still a thing, Daniel?
I don't know about a quality gap. There's certainly the financial gap. And I think what we have seen in the last few years is clubs Burnley did it, and I think Norwich have tried to do it, which is basically taking the money and run and say, well, this will help us for the next 5 years to push sustainably for the Premier League rather than just go up, spend loads of money and then get relegated like maybe Fulham did a couple of years ago. I don't think there's a standout candidate in the Championship this season, I have to say. That probably is more of an insult than a compliment. Brentford were brilliant and were innovative and felt fresh last year. And if they can replicate that, then I think they probably will be the best team in the league. But you can't underestimate the power of a club like Norwich, who spent £2 million in the Premier League on new players, come down and support, I think, oh, they've got eight new players and three more on loan already. So they're kind of looking at it as a three-season project, go up, go down, go up better. But yeah, the quality of football isn't brilliant, I don't think, at times. I have to say that. It sounds like sacrilege, but I don't think the football is good at times. But the excitement's always there and the tension's always there, which kind of eclipses any need for quality. And the quality is there in flashes enough that it kind of takes you off guard. It surprises you. You know, when a player like Eze QPR runs a midfield at a young age and scores a brilliant goal, you're like, oh yeah, of course, this is a really good football league. But it's got everything. I think that's how I sort of warp the insult into a compliment.
Yeah. I mean, Nancy, what's your view on it? I mean, do you think the footballing gap is closing between the Premier League and the Championship? Because you could argue that more newly promoted teams seem to be managing to stay up these days. So maybe you could say there's kind of less of a footballing gap, or do you not think it's the case?
I think obviously there is always that trope of them being, you know, favoured for relegation. I think the gap's probably bigger from League One to the Championship, to be honest. And, you know, just because that's a financial thing, really. You know, you don't see, or it's been a while since we've seen, like, probably like Bournemouth or Norwich and Southampton when they went from League One almost straight through. And it's kind of, I think from the Championship to the Premier League, again, I'd agree with Daniel, it doesn't seem to be like, I wouldn't think of a runaway favourite at the moment for this season, apart from those with parachute payments that have maybe got a bit more to throw around to get, you know, that 15 goal a season striker that every Championship team seems to be chasing desperately. And, you know, there just aren't enough of them out there pretty much for the right price anyway. But I don't know, I think the football quality is at times in the Championship a little bit lacking, to be honest. I think you can see the difference in pace maybe as where, like when I've watched, say, Leeds and Brentford this season, the intensity is there from what I think of when I watch a Premier League game and kind of the relentlessness of it, which obviously to sustain over a Championship season is crazy. So the fact that they're able to do that makes me think that they'd be more ready for that transition to the Premier League, where I think it's a bit more forgiving in terms of the schedule. But yeah, I think there are a lot of, I find, and this could just speak to the quality of Wednesday's season last year, but there are quite a lot of sometimes nothing games in the Championship, like a 0-0, like midweek, and I kind of think, oh god, I've got to write about something here, and it's, you know, that's just part of my job, that's the problem. But you know, it's kind of there's not always like a massive talking point, but then when those games are there, which is like more than three quarters of the time, but it's just, then it's crazy. It's the complete other end of the spectrum where it's like, oh my god, I've got reams and reams of things I could talk about, like tension, you know, sometimes I can barely peel myself away from the game to actually concentrate on writing on something because the atmosphere will be crazy. And so it's, I don't know, it's very peaks and troughs, I think, the championship as a fan and a reporter. So
yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And the key is kind of managing those. The best managers seem to be able to kind of manage those troughs, because like I said before, you will lose games in the Championship that you think you shouldn't lose. You know, you will lose, and no disrespect, but a huge amount of disrespect, obviously, because I'm saying it. You will lose at Rotherham, you will lose at Luton, you will lose at Wickham, and you'll feel like you shouldn't. But if you let that haunt you for even 10 days, then another three games have gone by. So it's those managers that are able to kind of take those players out of that firing line again. And like, clearly deep squads can help with that, but it's more about the psychology, I think. And you look at those managers who have done really well in the Championship, and I include Eddie Howe in this, when they went up, it's those managers who are kind of, can almost kind of bottle up all the pressure and take it on themselves and take it off the players. That's what Bielsa did so well. You know, he took the spotlight away from their players. It wasn't just about them being intense. It was the fact that they felt that they could play the football they wanted to play pressure-free, even in high-pressure scenarios. So, yeah, and it's easier said than done as well. Otherwise, yeah, every manager would be doing it.
We're not going to have fans in the stadiums at least till October at the earliest. So, Daniel, are you aware of what the clubs are doing in terms of showing games on their own websites? I think for us, we've got we're using our own service to do it. But what's happening at Forest and the other clubs? Are you aware of it?
Yeah, I mean, we've gone down the iFollow route, which is by no means a perfect service. I'm laughing as I say that because I'm underselling that phrase. But yeah, effectively, season ticket holders will get to watch games for free with a login on the club site or iFollow site. And then I think every other supporter can play £10 per home game. Now, I guess the clubs can't show away games because obviously that's effectively the property of the home club. So I actually don't know if there's a way that I assume fans of any club can pay £10 to watch any game. But yeah, that's going to be the norm for supporters now. And I suspect for the foreseeable, you know, even when they come back in October, I suspect we're looking at 30% capacity, which is no away fans and season ticket holders, perhaps even on a kind of rotation basis. And it's all very deeply depressing, albeit for very good reason. I long for the day when you can have a full house. But I think we're a fair way off that, it's fair to say.
What's it been like for you, Nancy, being at stadiums that are empty? It must be a strange old experience, isn't it?
Yeah, it's. I think I've found, like, people that I've spoken to, fellow journalists and stuff, have been in one of two camps. It's kind of like either people feel really obviously grateful and honoured to be one of the few people in the ground, or a few other people that I've spoken to have been like, it's good to be there, but it's absolutely soulless and it just doesn't feel like football as we know it, which I can sort of understand, really, because I mean, it's great because you get those insights of kind of hearing managers shouting at players and all the interactions that maybe we'd never normally pick up because it's lost in the crowd noise. But it does feel a bit like, you know, if you ever go to an under-23s game and it happens to be in Hillsborough or something, and you kind of sat there watching it and you find yourself getting a bit sort of distracted, or, you know, just the background swell of the crowd can be so valuable just to know when to look up from your laptop or whatever as a reporter. It's it is a bit strange. Yeah, I'll definitely be looking forward to when people are back, and again, especially with iFollow, for the ones that either we can't get to or hadn't been able to get to when it was the restart. Yeah, iFollow is a bit of an experience sometimes, but it'll be interesting with Sky, actually. I think now that Leeds have gone, they had so many Leeds games were on Sky, so you might start to see, you know, that spread a bit more evenly among other clubs, and Bournemouth might be one of them, to be fair.
Interesting. Okay, so we'll just wrap up by just briefly looking forward to this season, and we'll do some quick fire questions, and I'll come to you first, Dan. And who do you think is going to be in the mix for promotion this season?
I mean, going against my head, I'd pick Brentford and Norwich top two, I think. And then literally any four of about 12 clubs could make the playoffs. I think the most interesting club in the league is Coventry, who have obviously come up, but are the only promoted club not to feature in, you know, in the four or five favourites to get relegated. And their recruitment model's great. They buy really good young players. Mark Robbins doing a sensational job given the owners. So I think they're the most interesting club, but I don't think there'll be anywhere near promotion. So yeah, Norwich and Brentford are my two, I think.
Interesting. Nancy, who are you fancying for this season?
Yeah, I'd definitely go Brentford. I think I'd probably throw Swansea into the mix just because, I don't know, I feel like they were sort of getting there with something maybe, but I know that they were a bit hit and miss last season. The rest of the playoffs is always a bit of a mixed bag. Norwich is probably a good shout, actually, just for who they've signed. I should say Bournemouth, really, shouldn't I? That's a bit, maybe Bournemouth will adapt better or be more attuned to kind of that intensity or what's required from the Championship. Mm. I won't, you know, question Watford's cojones because we've been there before, but Frodini and stuff. But no, I think it'll be interesting. Again, yeah, the managerial changes and stuff, I think, probably do count for a lot, where Norwich have obviously still got Daniel Farker, and he did such a good job before. So, yeah.
Guys, thank you so much for coming on. Nancy, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us, and you know, best of luck this season.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been great to chat to you guys.
And also, Daniel, we really appreciate your input, and we just hope, for you at least, it's less of a last gasp season for Forest this time around, eh?
Yeah, I need to go and check whether Forest are playing Bournemouth really late on in the season.
Excellent.
Yeah, thank you so much. And Jeff, as ever, thank you so much for being on.
No, thanks. It's been great, and great to hear different perspectives as well. And maybe we should do a mid-season catch-up, the same group, see where we're all at.
I'm Jack Stacey, and you're listening to Back of the Net.
So there you go. Excellent to be able to chat to that pair. And as Jeff said, hopefully we'll be able to go over our midterm report and see how all our respective clubs are doing. Sheffield Wednesday, of course, they've got a right old task on their hands. But Forest, I mean, you could say the perennial bottlers, but so close last season. Can they make the playoffs this time? Can they do it automatically? Who knows? Leeds, one of the old school Premier League sides, managed to get back last season. Can Forest do the same? But our focus, of course, is on AFC Bournemouth, and we're wondering whether we can do it. Time will tell. Okay, cheers for listening to this podcast. Really appreciate you still tuning in until the very end. Just to give you a heads up that, yeah, we're going to be taking another break of a week, so there will be no pod next week. But we will be back the following Monday covering the Blackburn Rovers match. Now, if you want more content from us, YouTube is the place to be, because nearly every other day we're putting videos up there. And if you want to get some raw fans' reaction after that Blackburn match, well, we're doing a free-for-all as we always do. And, you know, hopefully we're going to be getting back into the stadiums and I can be chatting to people in person. I prefer having one person at a time. But on the free-for-alls, it's a bit of a madhouse, but we get a mixture of opinion, and we're all hoping that Bournemouth start the season strongly. Are signs good? Well, we'll find out, of course, as we play more friendlies in the next few days. But until then, thank you very much for listening. This has been Back of the Net, the AFC Bournemouth podcast.
Richie. Beyond Walker. Pugh. Pugh! That'll do it! That will do it! Pugh for Bournemouth! The roof at the goal!